Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody. All right, everybody. Welcome to a very special Sunday edition of Burn Radio. It's your host, Rabble Rouser. Usually we have the audio stuff set up differently, but this week we're broadcasting from Muddy Waters Collective for a special fundraiser to keep the place alive. So I'm going to address the people live here. So hey, everybody, I didn't get to do this before we started, but usually you can hear what we're saying through these, but we're trying something different, so you're not going to be able to hear exactly what we're saying through the speakers. But that doesn't mean you can't get loud, and so let's try to let everybody out there who's listening. This is broadcasting live right now on an internet radio show that has listeners all over the world, and tonight's guests are Mark Rudd from the Weather Underground and Howard Zinn, the author of People's History of the United States. So they're going to be phoning in throughout the evening, but let's everybody, this is whoever's here at Muddy Waters, say hello. So this is Rabble Rouser sitting here with a fill-in co-host, Carl with a K.
Hey, this is Carl.
And we're hoping to have a good show tonight. In the chat room, can you let us know if you can hear us? We're trying some new sound issues, and I don't know if this is working. So so please let us know. Are you Solidarity?
No.
Okay. Solidarity, I see you in the chat room. Type into the little box and let us know if this is coming through. In the meantime, I'm going to play a song, something that's loaded in already. Let's see. What would be a good one to play for tonight? We're going to talk about a lot of stuff tonight. We're just running a little late trying to get this shit all set up. So let's do this. Let's go ahead and play Give the Anarchist a Cigarette. This is Chumbawamba.
Albert! Woo! Bobby! Woo! For God's sake, burn it down! Gonna get.
All right, so that was Chumbawamba, Give the Anarchist a Cigarette. Hopefully we are being heard out there in the world of Blog Talk Radio. So let's check it. Can you hear the shit?
Hello, chat room.
Man, this is why anti-civilization, anarcho-primitive should not do a fucking internet radio show.
Anything for that matter.
Yeah, exactly. We should just sit around all fucking day. Okay, great. Solidarity says you can hear us talking, so we're going to figure this shit out tonight. Hopefully it's all going to work out just fine. So how the fuck is everybody here at Muddy Waters? All right, it says we're a little choppy. Let me try switching feeds here.
Is that more clear? Whoa!
Never mind that. It's still saying that we're choppy, but I don't know what to do. It's Skype. Fuck. It's the fucking CIA. I know it is. They fucking hate us. The fucking feds, man. This is another reason that we should be fighting the feds, because we can't do a good fucking internet radio broadcast. And if that's not a reason enough, you know, we got the prison industrial complex of slavery. We got, you know, wage slavery. We've got the decimation of the planet. We've got the enslavement and killing of the third world. Yeah, those suck. But
I like their cookies.
Right, they do have the cookies. But, you know, the fact that we can't broadcast an internet radio show that sounds good and clear, that's reason enough.
We have overcome the revolution as well.
See, because that's just because the pigs hurt us. See, they get scared when they found out.
They smell the fire.
Exactly. Yes, they're trying to quell the scent. Can you guys hear us out there in the cafe very well?
A little muddy.
So, for anybody out there listening who's not in Muddy Waters, everybody here knows what's going on here. For everybody out there listening in the radio world, we've been holding a pretty much a week-long fundraiser because Muddy Waters, the collective, is in danger of being closed because of financial situations. Apparently, it doesn't pay well to feed people and take care of people who love each other. That doesn't pay the bills.
Yeah, so... So here we are again, trying to do another event. I mean, that we would be doing it otherwise.
Yeah, Burn has become like bottom-up fundraising network. Like, it seems like every week we're asking people for their money. This is bullshit.
Well,
but I guess if you need money to live, you gotta do it. So here's the deal, everybody. Hey, Alo, what is the email address that we can send people to on PayPal to donate in Radio World? MuddyWatersPortland.com. If you go to MuddyWatersPortland.com, there's a donate button. So if you're listening to the show and you've got anything helps, just go and click on that. It's a little bit of mutual aid in action. The reason that we're asking you to donate, even if you don't live here and come here, is because this is a gathering point for the community. Muddy Waters is a space that is welcoming to people who don't generally fit into the spectrum of business. People who don't necessarily have a lot of money or are consumerist in their existence. This space is a gathering place for those people to come together and create and to, if not just create, but to have a safe space to be and to enjoy each other.
And I heard somebody actually kind of pinpoint it very well yesterday, actually, and they said without us all recognizing it, Muddy Waters has been kind of all of our sponsors in one way or another, as far as for certain people's art up on the walls, for this show, for people to just get out of the rain and the cold that it is here in Portland. And they all provide that every day.
Absolutely. And I think even though it's not necessarily explicitly run under anarchist principles, the idea that we have a gathering place for dissent is very important. And this is the place where I've met all of the people that I spend any time with in Portland that are working on ideas of liberation. And those ideas are fostered when you have a space that you know you can come to discuss anything, be it political, social, spiritual, no matter what it is that you're into, you can explore those ideas here together.
And these spaces are in danger across the country for many reasons. But, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist when I say that that there is a capitalist network out there that wants to see businesses like this disappear because it represents a business model that is not conducive to the ideas of profits over people, and that's threatening because once people realize that you can gather and you can create without massive amounts of profit being garnered to one party, people catches on, and this is frightening. This is very frightening to places like Starbucks where you can't even get on the internet for free. It's very frightening to places that aren't even large multinational corporations that function under the capitalist business plan of profits first and then the community. So funding a place like this, specifically in times of need, is a way that we can show that that we support these ideas, that we support gathering points for disenfranchised and for the fringe, for the marginalized people of society.
Taking a positive part in our communities, like very specifically taking part in one of the most positive focal points of our community.
Right, and now we're not going to pretend that that this is the mecca of anti-capitalist ideology because we're reminded of that in this crisis alone with the bills that have come in. We know that we don't live in a utopian society, and we're not approaching one with any deliberate speed. But however, we are laying a groundwork for people to have thought experiments and take that to the next level of life experiments and to understand what a community can be. For a lot of people that come here, I know that this is the one place that they feel safe and they have a family. And these collectives exist all across the country. Portland has a lot of collectives. So it's not as if this is an innovative idea. It's actually a very old idea. To come together and collectively support a space. And that's what Howard Zinn's going to be talking about and Mark Rudd's going to be talking about tonight when they phone in, is to kind of give us a little grasp on the history of the importance of having a collective space for the community to gather. So if you have anything that you can donate, or even if you just want to send a message of solidarity from across the country, if you're listening to the show, you can go to muddywatersportland.com. You can donate there. It's in the chat room. If you go to www on it, it'll link. So it's Carl with a K, our tech-savvy comrade here is going to be – that's comrade with a K – is going to be posting things into the chat room tonight. And you can follow those links. You can also just send messages of support are very important as well. I know that with various occupations and mobilizations that I've been to, the people that I know didn't have money that just – took time out to send a message of support from their collectives. That meant a lot. That really showed that people are willing to understand the global effort of deglobalization. And it's very important to understand that to have a local space, we do have to fight something that's much more than just a local monster.
I mean, while we have to react specifically in our localized areas, we have to understand that a lot of the issues that each of us are facing are very similar in portions of a larger problem.
Yeah, absolutely. This is systemic. These problems of a space, and it doesn't hurt to mention that the street that we're on, anybody who, I lived in Portland 6 years ago, and we would come down this street, and the businesses that exist on this street today would never have been here 6 years ago. And I'm speaking specifically of a lot of businesses that are tailored towards a upper middle class echelon of people. They've already gentrified Northeast. They gentrified the Pearl District, which was never called the Pearl District before these assholes came in with all the wine, cheese, and crackers you can take. Now we see that happening in every neighborhood, and slowly pushing communities out, and community businesses are being pushed out. So as you see the level of business that shows up on this street, you'll see that the rents will be raising and that people call it property value. This is what the most interesting idea to me is property value raising. A piece of land where people can congregate becomes more valuable in the mind of a capitalist system. Therefore, people can't afford to congregate there anymore. Yeah, exactly.
The dirty and poor are always very scary, we understand.
Right. So So just the inherent term property value takes away any real value of land existence, of land cohesiveness, coexistence with anything, and rooting yourself into that piece of land, that particular ecoregion, that particular community, becomes harder and harder when you're up against an ideology of value being arbitrarily placed upon our lives. We're told that we are less valuable if we have less to offer in the eyes of what's valuable. And the funniest thing about this is you go to places like MoMA in New York, and you have Vincent van Gogh's painting on the wall, and millions of tourists a day come to New York and come through that space to look at that painting that was painted by a fucking bum. He was a vagrant. He was homeless. He was despised. And yet this painting is called priceless instead of not having a price on it. There's a difference. Our lives should not have a price on it, and our community should not have a price. And we just seem to glorify the mistreatment of ourselves in this culture. And it's sick. And things like Muddy Waters is the cure for that. It offers a small dose of medicine that's needed. Could I say medicine for the people? for all those people. Medicine for those people. Yeah, but I think that we've seen really, that maybe this is the first time that we've actually seen across the board the people of Muddy Waters coming together, acting as more than patrons, and acting as a collective to save this. We're going to do a quick microphone switch here, so I'm going to throw on a song. This song, this is by David Aerobics. We play this a lot because I haven't updated our soundboard, but enjoy. East Tennessee.
I grew up on this mountain, came back here to dwell. Maybe have a family, plant some corn and dig a well. I was all done with the army, back from Vietnam, where I learned how to shoot a rifle and how to set a bomb. I grew up on this mountain, it's in my very soul. So when the company moved next door, started digging for the coal, tearing up the mountain with drillers and drag lines, I knew then what needed to happen to those mines. 10, 9, 8, sometimes that's just how it goes. 3, 2, 1, get out before it blows. Guard, he was sleeping on duty through the night. I stepped gently on the ground, stayed well out of sight. I tied sticks to the equipment, switched the timer on, and I knew that in 10 seconds these dozers would be gone. 10, 9, 8, sometimes that's just how it goes. 3, 2, 1, get out before it blows. I had to leave the mountain, I headed to the west. The cops were on my trail, and I figured it was best. And I figured I did my small part to make the world free in my humble manner in East Tennessee. 10, 9, 8, sometimes that's just how it goes. 3, 2, 1, get out before it blows. 10, 9, 8, sometimes that's just how it goes. 3, 2, 1, get out before it blows. Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's David Robicks, East Tennessee. You can download all of David Robicks' music for free on soundclick.com/David Robicks. You can also check him out at davidrobicks.com. David played here last night. He's a Portland community member, came down and he played at the fundraiser and had a great time. And he's going to be, if you live in the D.C. area, he'll be in D.C. next week with Cindy Sheehan and a few other cats that are protesting a little organization called the CIA. You might not know who they are. They're kind of an upstart, young organization. Exactly. Apparently, there's a big problem with sweet potato pie recipes there, and it's really intrusive upon the community. So they're going to go stop the CIA from making those.
Down with sweet potatoes.
Yeah, that's right. Because really, what's sweet about a potato anyway? I mean,
I'm for the
yams. Yeah, yams are much better, and they're yellow, which is nice. They have, sweet potatoes are just these bland white things. But at any rate. So, David, if you check out David Robicks' site, he's one of the people that have been helping. He helped out last night by coming down here to play. There's just been a slew of people. I don't even know anybody's name to mention, but I've seen probably 300 people I've never seen before come through and lend a hand to help out keeping this place alive. And the collective crew at Muddy Waters have just been busting their ass the last week, going without sleep. So. It's not like they ever got paid to do this before, but just imagine if you're not getting paid and not allowed to sleep for a week. Kind of sounds like the late 90s for me, but I was on drugs, so I was on drugs a lot back then. It was fun.
For some time.
Yeah, when you're 19. Okay. Who cares about the state when you're 19? Just want to get high. So we are missing G20 side of die. He actually was injured in a D&D related accident. Apparently, some elf came along and cast some kind of freeze spell or something. And
ice spike, I believe, level 5.
Level 5 ice spike. That's right. And he just didn't have enough geldings to battle it. So he's stuck somewhere in Millendor or whatever the name of the land is where they're at. So everybody, please send your support mentally, psychically, and nerdily to G20 Side of Die. Hopefully, he will be back next week.
If we have a cleric in the room, please step forward.
So we don't really have a plan for tonight's show. We were actually going to be off tonight, and then we got this call about what was happening here, and we decided to throw the show together. And a couple people, Howard Zinn. And Noam Chomsky and Mark Rudd all agreed to do this show out of the kindness of their hearts to show what solidarity is. They've never been to Muddy Waters, but obviously they understand the importance of having a community space. And I think that a lot of people here, didn't quite understand how important it was until it started to slip away from them. And that's what happens. We anarchists are really good in times of crisis, but we're not necessarily great at sustainable communities. And this is a lesson that we're all learning, is how to sustain a community, as opposed to just coming together in times of crisis. But these guys have donated their time to call in tonight. I did get a call from Noam Chomsky this morning. I thought it was Tom Waits that I was talking to on the phone because he was so gruff. He's very, very ill right now. And he sends his regrets and his regards and wants everybody here to understand that that we do have his support. He just can't talk on the phone today. But Howard Zinn is still going to be phoning in from Boston, and Mark Rudd still phoning in. So it's not like we're at a loss for amazing people to phone in. And we're also not a loss for amazing people that are here. And so I'm thinking, since we don't have a format, maybe we should open this up to the people of Muddy Waters to come and maybe give a teary-eyed testimonial of some sort, if you'd like, or just talk about what's important about community space to you. Because we could talk about the ideologies of the importance of community space all day. We've all read the zines about it, and we've all read the bumper stickers. But there's something a lot more important to that. I was reading... more important than bumper stickers. The thing is like this. Words are not the important thing. It's the life behind the words that make importance. If in his famous speech in the 1960s, instead of saying "I had a dream," Martin Luther King said, "I know in my heart I was right," and Richard Nixon, instead of saying "I know in my heart I was right," he said, "I had a dream." It's not as if the King speech would be any less powerful, or the Richard Nixon speech would be any more powerful.
it's not the words that are important. It's the lives that are behind them. And it's the people that can share their lives, not just their ideas, not just their ideologies, but their experiences. So if anybody here, you don't have to be a great public speaker. You just have to be able to come up and say why this place is important to you. If anybody wants to come up at any time, just walk right up. The mic will be yours. Or if anybody wants to call in until we have a caller, this would be kind of fun. The phone number to call in is 646-200-3974. So if you're listening to the show and you're in the chat room right now and you're a part of a collective or wish you were a part of a collective or were a part of a collective at some point, if you want to call in and share your experience with that collective, what went wrong, what went right, and why it was so important to you to at least try it and experiment with a community-based network of people. The phone lines are open, so give us a ring. In the meantime, I don't really know what to say, what to do. I know I can talk a little bit about Burn and what happened with us moving here from Missouri to start Burn. Burn has been a bi-coastal show, being West Coast hosted by G20 Side of Die, and then the No Coast of Missouri is where I resided. And we hosted the show on the internet from our homes. And I was talking with Seth Martin, who's a fantastic musician and a pretty good-looking dude. And he keeps telling me over the last few years about this place, Muddy Waters, and how important it is to him. And we decided about 2 weeks before we moved here that we were going to move here. We were in Philadelphia at a conference, and I was hanging out with Seth, and he was telling me about the things going on here and how there's a community of people that are coming together, and he's starting to see something really, the seed really starting to sprout. And we had already seen the blossoming of our collective actions in Missouri, and there's a sustainable network and community of people there that really love each other. And so we didn't feel like we were leaving anything. We felt like we were coming back to Portland to help create something. And we took the train. We decided that we would move, and then 2 weeks later, we packed the kids up, gave away everything we owned, and hopped the train here. We took the train, and as soon as we got off, the first place we came was Muddy Waters. And the first people that I met were the collective workers of Muddy Waters, and they had never met me in their life. They were super sweet, gave me hugs, and hooked it up fat with a dope-ass sandwich. And immediately, I was a part of the community, and we started doing Burn nearly right away, live on stage from here. And what we've seen in just a few episodes of Burn being broadcast from here is this network of radical-minded people that come here on a Sunday night and laugh at themselves and laugh at each other and have a really fucking good time. And for an anarchist group of people to come together and laugh is almost fucking unheard of. People that don't know each other, especially in Portland, where not only does it matter if you're an anarchist, but how you hyphenate your anarchism is so important with who you get to hang out with. Well, here we have this cross spectrum of different ideologies and people that have different ideas coming together to hear people like Derek Jensen call in, or to meet people like John Zerzan, or to meet people like Dan Bruno Bacon and hear them play some songs, or Christian Williams, any of these people that we've had on the show since we started hosting here. And we have great times together, whether there's 5 of us in the room or 150 of us, like there was a couple weeks ago. It was very sweaty, which was weird for December.
I thought you would have liked that.
I did. I love sweating collectively. Collective sweating. Let's just start. Let's put collective before we hear everything. You know? let's just make, like, everything will be collective from now on. We have to play swords too. We have to collectively urinate. Collective urination.
Collective urination.
Let's fuck it, man. Let's just collectivize everything. Everything. The whole world. Okay. You wipe me, I'll wipe you. Deal? Are we not down? Are we not there yet? I thought we were there, like in the space, like the trust.
I need dinner first.
Okay, well, speaking of that, Food Not Bombs is just down the street here. So that's some of the ideas that have been going through here, through my mind since I've been here, is what an amazing testament it is to a business to allow a bunch of foul-mouthed fucking assholes to host a radio show on their stage in front of anybody who comes in, and they have the courage to respect those people and to back them up against any opposition that might come in. I'm sure that at some point, if not yet, somebody will be complaining to them about something they heard on this radio show, because we are foul-mouthed and we are disgusting at times, but we're good-hearted and we have fun. But these people at Muddy Waters, this collective,
doesn't take the business interest in mind of, well, this could offend some customers and we could lose some money if we have these people. They know damn well that if 100 anarchists show up, they're going to maybe make $20 at the counter. Tops, because you know, none of us have money, yet they welcome us in with open arms and they really support us. And that's just one small aspect that brings me into this community and why we're here, why this is the first place we came to when we got to Portland, and why this is the place that we come to as often as possible.
Well, yeah, that's exactly actually what we did last night coming in from California. First place we came with Muddy Waters to not only see if it was still alive, but to have that specific vein to tap into to see everybody that we do know and see how they're doing as well and what's been going on recently. Because, I mean, what better place to go than Muddy?
Right. And, you know, the people that you meet here, there's, you know, in a place like Portland, we have it handed to us in a lot of ways. We're very lucky in Portland to have radical events happening on a regular basis. In fact, maybe I would say that we're a little unlucky in that, because that stifles a lot of startup organizing, because it's just handed to you. You take it for granted. There's always something going on. Well, the interesting thing about Muddy's is about half the people I meet are the ones that are organizing those things that are going on. They're the ones who have their hands in it, and their blood and their sweat and their tears are invested in these projects, and this just happens to be the place. It's not like we live in the neighborhood. A lot of people do, but most of us don't. We specifically come here because we know that we're going to be running into people who do give a shit about you and do give a shit about some of the things that you give a shit about. So when we have that dynamic taking place, then it's important to hold on to that. And in the future, hopefully we're going to be seeing less crisis in people coming together, and just people coming together because they can, because they have this space, and now they know that this is where they can come to get things done. And it doesn't just have to be about saving this space. After the space is saved, it can be about anything. It can be just a potluck, a dance.
Yeah. I mean, let's stop waiting for Judgment Day and just make it every day.
Make Judgment Day every day?
Well, sure, why not?
Every day apocalypse?
No.
You are a dark, twisted fucker, Carl with a K. You're like, I want raining sulfur from the sky daily. Like, you know, I want to hear the horns of Jericho daily. It's Tuesday. Why not a little bit of Armageddon? What are you saying?
I was saying not to wait for Judgment Day and to have collective attitudes every day. But yeah, collective fire and brimstone every day, that works as well.
I can't wait until there is that collective upheaval when Jesus, if he does make his second coming, you know, if you're a Christian, I'm not a Christian, so I don't necessarily believe that. But if you do believe that, like that, when there's like people get pissed because Jesus didn't like work with consensus. You know, it's like, oh, so you decide it's the end of the world and that we all have to die? No, blocking consensus right now. Like, do you think he'd be down with that? I mean, everybody says Jesus was an anarchist. Do you think he would work by consensus? Come down and be like, all right, listen, I'm thinking maybe tomorrow. What do you guys, does that work for you to end the world tomorrow?
To have the hope? I mean, if
last great battle of good and evil? Anybody?
Well, actually, speaking of, does that mean that we need Lucifer's consensus as well?
I don't know. Do you need the consent of the oppressor? I'm asking you. I'm asking you. I'm asking you. It's on the table. or is Lucifer the liberator? I don't know. I don't know. These are things we can talk about. These we can. Let's work this out, Carl. We're going to work collectively. You and I, remember? We are collectively debating. So are we debating?
No, I don't think
we're agreeing or disagreeing
on
it. But I know that you're wrong. That's one thing I know.
I am definitely.
Yeah, prove it. Prove it. Okay, come on up. Come on up. Blair's got a testimonial. This is the one you're going to want to speak into.
I'm going to speak my testimonial into the good microphone, or maybe the bad microphone, or maybe both. Okay. So,
We are the best.
It's all my fault.
Here, lean in.
Okay. When I was 14, I was growing up in Rochester, New York, and there was a cafe much like this that supported radical stuff and arts and poetry and music, and I went there and it saved my fucking life. And when that cafe was closing down, the first thing my dad, God bless his heart, did was give them $100. And when I heard about what was going on with Muddy Waters, the first thing I did was give them $100. And I, you know, because I have the, you know, good fortune of being able to make my own living and be able to do that. But, you know, I think that people really need to keep this kind of thing around. And it was really sweet when I was playing a show here on Wednesday. I saw this little, like, 14-year-old girl, and she brought her mom in. And her mom was, like, asking me, you know, oh, so what's going on with this? My daughter wanted me to come and, like, buy the merch because, you know, she wants to support this thing. And she, you know, saw you play music and stuff. And it was just, it was all like the circle of life and shit. It was so wonderful and beautiful and nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's Blair. She's a fabulous poet and musician. I've known Blair for a few years. You know, it's these places that we make these connections, these lifelong connections. It's not, none of us knew each other in school because we all hated school. You know, it's these kind of spaces that allow us to come together. That's really feeding back in a very upsetting way. Maybe we can get that turned down a little bit. I think it's mic number one, I think it is. Yeah, turn the speaker a little bit, maybe. But yeah, I mean, when I was introduced to punk rock, I was this, you know, strikingly gorgeous fat kid, and you know, wildly unpopular. And I moved to a big city with my single mother, and from the Midwest, I moved to Tucson, Arizona, and I didn't fucking know anybody, and I didn't care to know anybody. I hated the world. And then some kid recognized the look of disdain for the world in my face as a 14-year-old. You know, kid that gets picked on, and he handed me a flyer, and I'd never seen a flyer before. And, you know, he took me down that weekend to a punk rock club that I learned quickly was run by a bunch of kids my age. And they immediately welcomed me in, and we threw some of the most amazing shows over the next 10 years in that town, going from space to space, squatting spaces, working up to the point where we could actually afford to get a space. And within the first 3 months of getting that space that we could afford to pay rent on, the landlord got wind of what we were doing and how popular it was, and upped our rent ridiculous amounts and kicked us out. And so that space hopped from space to space to space, and it's just amazing when you see something that is so supported by the people that are involved and so detested by those who don't give a shit. It's not like they could care less whether we're here or we're not here. It seems that there's this agenda to shut down anything that pulls together poor people. And, you know, I don't want to think there's a grand conspiracy, but God damn it, you know, how many times can we lose these spaces before we start understanding they don't want us to congregate unless it's at a church where we're sitting and facing a pastor, you know, like unless it's someplace where we're subservient. But spaces like this that not only ask you to be active and involved, but require it of you. It requires participation. That's fucking amazing. And these spaces are the spaces that did save a lot of lives and will save a lot of lives. And beyond that, they'll create movements. You know, let's not forget that these people that we're going to be hearing from when they phone in, like Mark Rudd and Howard Zinn, it's not like these people were always well-known figures and voices of dissent. I mean, Howard Zinn started in a small schoolhouse in Spelman College as a white professor in an all-female black, all-black college, and he was fired because he stood up for the student population there and incited people to get active and to fight against injustice in their own system, and they fired him for it. And these are the spaces. These are the spaces where those meetings took place. These are the spaces where revolutions begin. And I don't want to sound light or cheesy with that, but it's true. It's fucking true. You don't know who you're going to meet here, and you don't know what kind of connection you're going to make, and you don't know who's going to save your life when the shit really starts going down. I'm pretty confident that Seth Martin's going to be there when I need him. I'm pretty confident that Carl with the K and Alley Cat and Donnie and Angela and Blair, I'm pretty confident that these people will, and I know that because I see them here on a regular basis. Carl's a dick. but no, I know that because I've experienced these people on a pretty regular basis. I've experienced them in times of crisis, and I've experienced them in times of joy and in times when nothing was happening. And that's what these spaces offer. It's not just a space to come together when things are going bad. It's a space that we're together all the time. So we get to see joys, we get to see boredom. And we're bored out of our fucking minds sometimes. We're playing board games with, you know, pennies as the pieces because the pieces are gone. And it's fun to us. Who has fun doing that daily? We do. You know, like, we do. We have fun doing that shit.
So
why?
He's actually the Connect Four resident champion, I do believe.
Connect Four resident champion?
Oh, yeah.
you know that the quickest way to get overthrown is to say you're the king. So it's on. I'm going to take that belt away. We should be getting a call any minute now, so I'm not going to play any music. I'm not going to play any music until we get our caller coming in. Later on today, we're going to be having some live music on this show and all over here. Are you guys having fun? Like, not just at the radio show, but, I mean, in general, these last few days, like, I know it's been really hard and trying for a lot of people who have been working their butts off round the clock to keep this thing going. And, it was so packed in here yesterday that we couldn't even stay, which is a really good thing. I love it when it's too busy for us to be a part of something. Like, that's better than nothing happening, I think. You know? Yay for something. Let's just clap for a second. Come on, everybody. Oh, yay. Yay, we all look like steel. This is awesome. I want to balance a ball on my nose. I don't know. Let's Yeah. There it is. No, we don't have a clap track on here anymore. We did have a clap track. Yeah, there's this. This is what happens whenever we get calls from the enemy. This is what they get in the middle of their espousing racist, sexist lingo. Is this. It's not done. I will have you know that when Padre Friedman, the grandson of Friedman, was on this show, I used that vomit button nearly without end. It was almost the entire time he was on, and whenever the vomit wasn't going on, I was yelling at him like Bill O'Reilly. I was just screaming at this asshole. It's a fun show. You can go to the archives and listen to that. But yeah, it's gonna be things like this. It's gonna be innovative ideas like a radio show. How boring does that sound to anybody? Like. Yeah, come down and watch me host a radio show. Like, that sounds horrible. Like, it's worse than watching radio shows on TV. You're actually sitting in person watching some dude talking to a computer. That sounds so boring to me. Like, but it's cool somehow. And we've made it a fun thing. It's things like this that are going to be coming out of spaces like this across the country. Like, just these ideas that people have. You know, it's beyond just open mics at this point. It's beyond just art shows, beyond those things. People are coming together and realizing they have a space to experiment with. You might fail. It might be horrible. They might hate you for it. They might throw a sandwich at your face. but at least they have a space to do that in. At least they have a space to come together and experiment with ideas and experiment with actions. And that's invaluable to me. You know, I like having a space where I can come and see, test the waters with hosting a radio show live on stage. Is it going to work? Is it entertaining? I don't know. It might fail, but even if it fails, they're not going to ask us to leave. They're going to let us do our thing, and that's pretty amazing. And by the way, Burn's not going to fail because we are too small to fail. So I don't know if you – it's an economy joke. Economy.
Yeah.
Economic joking. So, Mark Rudd is late calling in. So when he calls in, everybody, let's just tell him that he's late. What he calls? Does that sound like fun? Oh, wait a second.
Hello.
Everybody, I think we have Mark Rudd on the line. Mark,
that's
is
correct.
That you?
That's me.
Mark, this is Portland.
Hello, Portland. Sounds like you got a live audience.
Yes, we do have a very live audience, and we've been waiting patiently for your call, Mark. And what do you have to say about it?
Well, what do you have to say? What's going on over there?
Well, man, I sent you the email. Come on.
I know, but you got to tell me about it. It's you've got a community center, right?
Well, it's a cafe. It's a cafe that recently, in the last year, has gone through some changes in the way that it's functioning, challenging a business model that's one that we're told that we have to stick to. They're challenging that business model by bringing in collective worker ownership and bringing in a community space that is focused not just nonprofit but anti-profit. It's focused on the idea of existence outside of the realms of money, which is exactly why we're doing a fundraiser for money.
Because you need 10 grand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's very expensive to live for free. And so I figured you might have a little experience with collective working and collective organization. You've done a little bit of organizing and a little community stuff in your past. Why don't you tell us about that and the importance of having a space to gather to do that in?
Well, a friend of mine here in Albuquerque talks about sacred public spaces. And his notion is that the community only exists if there's a place where people get together. I suppose you could create a community on the web or Twitter or something, but it still has got to be face-to-face, you know? And I salute you. That's what you're doing. You're creating a space. Here in New Mexico, there's a word for it. It's called resolana. It means a place in the sun, a place like on a winter day, like today. You go and it's sunny, and I guess you don't have too much sun in the winter, but it's a place where you go and people talk. And I guess the essence of it is talking. So that's what you're doing, and I sure hope you can keep it going. Money is necessary for this, though, unless you can do it without money. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, of course we've all thought about creative ways to do things without money. I think that the interesting thing about collective actions that Muddy Waters are endeavoring upon is not just doing something for free, organizing at people's houses, but moving into the business sector and challenging the way the business sector runs, and challenging it not by ideologies or protests, but just by action, by positive creative action.
What is the business plan? What is the non-business plan?
What is the non-business plan?
I don't
know. It would be interesting to be talking about those things, and I think that's something that we're going to be looking forward to in the future is having a collective meetings and having ideas, community meetings about what those plans could be and what it could look like. We'll have to see what comes of that, but the first step is going to be to save the space. Now, in your years with organizing with SBS, was it just that all of a sudden you'd look outside and 1,000 people came together to occupy a campus?
Hardly. No. Your question implies the answer. No, it has to do with a lot of hard, I'm using the term spade work. A lot of just digging in the garden, digging in the earth. And that's really what you're doing now, is you're doing that spade work. Things don't happen spontaneously. Well, occasionally they do happen spontaneously, but they don't last.
They're not sustainable.
Take, for example, 2003. Millions of people went out into the streets spontaneously opposing the war in Iraq.
I think we had some organization with that beyond just the radical organizers. We had a crew of rich white men who were organizing the destruction of the planet, and they organized for us.
And all they had to do was wait
to have a stark enemy.
Exactly, and all they had to do was wait us out. And sure enough, they did wait us out, and that movement did not grow because it didn't have the sort of what you might call the organizational infrastructure. So what you're doing now is you're building an organizational infrastructure.
When you're building this infrastructure back in Columbia, can you explain to us what that looked like? I think we have a tendency to...
Knocking on doors, doing educational work, showing films about the war, all-night teach-ins on the war, educating ourselves about the nature of the war and the nature of the system behind it, talking to people about their own lives and how the war impinges on them and whether they can make a difference. That's what organizing is. It's about education, and it's about building relationships. Occasionally it's about confrontation. We did that to push the organizing. But the idea is always growth, involving more and more people, and more people in relationship to the organizers. becoming friends and figuring out together how we can build the movement. That's what you're involved in. It's fabulous, you know, to have Muddy Waters and as a center that you can begin that spade work, that long term work. It's very difficult work. It's going to be the work of the rest of our lives. I'm going to die pretty soon. I'm 63. I'll probably die in the next 30 or 40 years. You guys have a few more years. It'll be the work of the rest of your lives. It's not going to be quick. You know that, and that's why you're doing this. It's really fabulous.
Can you then explain? Just tell us. You live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You've never been to Muddy Waters Cafe. I think it's really a testament and interesting. I'd like to see your perspective on why you took the time to call tonight.
Creates discussion does the spade work, builds the organizational infrastructure. Anything is worth doing. About 4 years ago, I came up to Portland for a hardcore punk festival called Steal This Festival. Dawson Barrett, who was a punk musician, a hardcore musician, threw it as his going away to Portland. And I came up and had a great time talking with people at that festival about the nature of the war, the nature of the imperial system, and what we can do about it. That's spade work, too. I mean, everything we do is part of the same turning over the ground, getting ready, building an organizational infrastructure. Michael, everywhere you go, you do it, and it's really fabulous.
Well, Mark, I got to say it's been awesome having a long-term relationship with you and knowing I could, depending on you, that I could call in a pinch and see if you could come out and do this.
But let me ask you this. Are you going to really get $10,000 today?
Well, I don't know.
And also, are you going to need
to... Where are we at right now, everybody? What's the latest figure that we're at? Yeah, we were at $5,000 yesterday.
Good.
But I think that there's something happening now that's going beyond just raising the $10,000 to save this space. What I've seen is it start off as what are we going to do? We're doing something. And win, lose, or draw, which was an awesome TV show, by the way, game show. But beyond that. Win, lose, or draw, we've already established that we can come together and work together, and I think that that's going to outlast any piece of property. And you know, that's part of what you and I have talked about for years now, Mark, is sustainability. Is it sustainable? Is it going to work?
Also, another question I'd like to ask, in addition to that question of sustainability, is the question of coalition between different kinds of people. Is it going to be just the street people coming in, who comes to Muddy Waters, and will it be a place where you can get different kinds of people?
I'm looking around now, and I see every age demographic represented. I see every race and class demographic represented, and it's always been this way since I've been here. It's been a space where it wasn't cliquish like other radical spaces I've been to. That's been very cliquish. If you weren't dirty enough, you couldn't get in. Muddy Waters isn't like that. There's no righteousness of dirt here. There's no righteousness of anything other than community, and that's what's so awesome about it.
Right. Cool.
People hang out here don't even know each other outside of Muddy Waters, but they're here, and they take part in each other's actions. It's really Mark, I got to say, I'm not just kissing ass right now with this space. It really is something that I haven't seen for at least 12 years in a radical community, or any community for that.
Great.
And my mom's here, and she's drunk and yelling. So.
Oh, was that your mom? Hi, Mom.
Oh.
Hey, ask anybody if they want to ask me a question.
Hey, anybody, you just heard him, but do you want to ask Mark a question? Anybody have a question for Mark Rudd?
How to make a bomb?
I'll have you know that Mark is an amazing cook. Do you have a question about some recipes?
How about how to make bombs? You want to know about how to make bombs?
Well, Ward Churchill was on our show a couple weeks ago, and he told us how to make bombs.
He's
can
a
tell
cop.
Us how to make bombs. Mark Rudd from
anybody who tells anybody else how to make bombs is a cop.
Speaking of that, how is your work going with the FBI these days, Mark?
they paid me expenses to go out to Quantico, Virginia, twice to talk to the cops out there. It was pretty weird. I wrote about it on my website. It's called Mark Goes to the Dark Side. It's about my trip to Quantico, Virginia. I'm not going to go back, but I did meet. I did meet the FBI agent recently who spent a couple years looking for me in the 70s. That was pretty interesting.
Well, it sounds like a Lifetime original movie or an episode of Maury Povich or something. Like, I would love to have seen that reunion. We had some visits from some federal agents here a couple weeks ago. We're all pretty sure. They were pretty uninterested to be here. They looked like they were just so pissed off that they had to be at this cool gathering with all these cool people, and they were not, like, fighting terrorists or whatever they think they're going to do with their career. Like, you know, these are the rookies that got sent out on the, why don't you go and monitor the anarchist radio show tonight? Like, it was pretty great. So years after the fact, Mark, years after the SDS and the occupations of Columbia, years after the Weather Underground, and years after the running from the Fed, you've still continued to come out and organize, but under a different fashion. Now, you enter into debate, into discourse about this. I'd like you to talk about why you think it's important to have a diversity of ideas as opposed to a unilateral idea of what this means. Because I've heard you talk about this before. And you put
obviously,
it really well,
no. So. Obviously, nobody's got the truth. Anybody who thinks they do are self-deluded. Even anarchists don't have the total truth. Anarchism is an ideology. It's a set of ideas, as is every other ideology. The idea of ideologies is that they take reality and try to put it into a fairly logical framework. It tends not to work, unfortunately. So one of the things I believe, one of the things that I learned is not to believe everything I think. You know, I had a bumper sticker that says, don't believe everything you think. So, you know, diversity of ideas is the only possible way to combat ideology. Because the truth of the matter is, every ideology is wrong. All ideologies are wrong. There's even a precept, I think, in Buddhism that says all ideologies are wrong, including Buddhism. So anarchism isn't right. I happen to find myself at the moment a liberal Democrat with a big D.
Boo on you.
I'm a member of the Democratic
the only
Party.
One I'm very disappointed. Let's try that again. Try that again, Mark. Tell us that you're a liberal Democrat.
I'm a liberal Democrat. And wonderful. My goal is to turn the Democratic Party in a center-left direction. It's going to take a lot of work. Obviously, it's a party of the corporations right now, but I want to turn it into a party of the people. Now,
parties are just about getting and potlucking. We don't have any party programs.
Right.
That's why I like anarchists.
Right.
We don't have delegates, but I do remember that you were saying that the food was amazing inside of the DNC last year. But I have to say that I would think that the Food Not Bombs and Seeds of Peace really created a much better menu at the DNC.
No. Your food was better than the Liberal Democratic food, no doubt about it.
Yeah, recipes for disaster. We can cook up a revolution. That's right. Well, that's what the Dalai Lama said. Mark, thank you for calling in. I want to hold on just a second. You can stay on the line, but I got another caller coming in here.
No, you've got to take Noam Chomsky. I got to get off. Goodbye, Portland. Anarchism forever.
Bye, Mark.
Bye.
Thanks so much, Mark. I'll talk to you soon, bud. Caller, you're on the line. Who is this?
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, we're going to call on 111.
This is Howard.
Hey, everybody. This is Howard Zinn. Howard, that's everybody. That's Muddy Waters Collective.
Oh, thank you.
So, that was just Mark Rudd we were talking to, Howard, and what we were talking about was the importance of organizing and having a space to do that in. You probably know a little bit about that, too, so maybe you wouldn't mind sharing with us here about why it is important to support radical spaces and collective spaces.
Well, because individually we don't have any real power. Individually we can speak up, we can protest, we can, you know, set an example as an individual, but you don't have real power as an individual. The only time you have power is when you get together with other people, and because, you know, ultimately the power of the people who are in charge, by that I mean the people in government, the corporate executives, the power that they have depends totally on the obedience of people. And when that obedience is withdrawn, then they have no power. And that's why it's so important to get together with other people. Well, you know, if you're a working person and you face General Motors, if you face a corporation, if you face Exxon, as an individual worker, you have no rights. You have no power. When you get together with other workers, you have the power to strike. And when you strike, people learned this in the 1930s, they thought, a lot of people said, you can't defeat General Motors. You can't defeat the Ford, the Motor Company. They're gigantic. They're rich. They're powerful. But when workers got together and they went out on strike, General Motors was helpless. Ford Motor Company was helpless. And so that's why organizing with other people, get together with other people, forming a power that you don't have individually, a power that can countervail the existing power structure, that's what organizing is about.
Would you say that's a power that governments cannot suppress?
Where did you get that line?
I don't know. I'm thinking of writing a book, though.
that happens to be the title of one of my books, so I guess I believe it.
Yeah, it's actually one of my favorite books of yours.
Thanks.
Because it talks about exactly that. It goes beyond just talking about the historical perspective of resistance, but talks about the realistic ideas that are present today. And I think that this is what the collective space is about. About here that we're not in history, we're in the present, and we can do this today. What do you see happening right now? You get the opportunity in the to travel a lot and work with a lot of radical groups, and you're kind of a person that radicals all over the world can turn to for a bit of sanity or a bit of understanding. What do you see happening? Do you see after this Obamania? Do you see there's now a rise in radical actions and radical thoughts?
What I see is more and more people who were initially enthusiastic about Obama, and one can understand their initial enthusiasm, happy to get rid of the Bush regime and listening to the words of a man who promises change, and they're ebullient about Obama's victory. And I was, too. I wanted him to win. I wanted to get rid of the Bush regime. But what, of course, happened right after his election, and I must say, you know, 3 minutes after I left the voting booth, I was critical of Obama. but it has taken many, I don't want to claim to be ahead of other people in understanding Obama's limitations. Well, I don't want to claim it, but I am. But what has happened, and this is encouraging, is that more and more people who were enthusiastic about Obama now have taken a hard look at his policies and realize that his words about change and peace and quoting King and quoting Gandhi, his words have not been matched by action. And in fact, he has continued many of the Bush policies, both in foreign policy and in domestic policy. So I am encouraged by the fact that more and more people are seeing through Obama's empty rhetoric and realize that they cannot depend, none of us can ever depend on the person in the White House, on leaders, on the elite, on the authorities. We cannot depend on them to bring about social change. We can only depend on ourselves. And that's something we can learn from looking through history and seeing how again and again promises were made to people who then voted for candidates they thought were going to solve their problems. But that has never happened. People had to do it themselves. And the labor movement learned this. Black people learned this. Women learned this. The 60s were a good example of that. Black people in the South could not depend on the national government to protect their lives or their liberties or their right to vote. And they had to go out in the streets and create a commotion and demand it. And the people in this country who turned against the war in Vietnam more and more soon realized they couldn't depend on the government to stop the war. They had to create a real noise in the country and really scare the government into deciding, well, we can't go on with this war. So I think that more and more people are beginning to realize that they cannot depend on Obama to save us, that we are going to have to do it ourselves.
Yeah, you're cutting out just a touch, but yeah, I definitely think that the most radicalizing aspect of any system is not those who necessarily can disseminate the information about radical ideas, but the most radicalizing aspect is the oppressive forces. Tear gas has radicalized more people than bumper stickers. And I think that that's what we're starting to see. We're starting to see this shift in ideas. But one thing that I think that I think is really interesting that I'd like to maybe explore with you is how as a community in times of crisis, and they can come together strong and they can save each other when things are really bad. But when things are good, how we act as a community in those times and the down times, I think, is the testament to the community. And what I've seen from movements in the past is anti-war movements and things that have come together to create social change when it seemed that like it was most necessary, and then slack off and become unsustainable, allowing this ebb and flow of oppression to come back in. What I'd like to see is a community that's built on a coexistence and an understanding all the time, not just when things are bad. And I'd like to see spaces like this create that. What do you think about that? Is this possible? Is this something that you're seeing? Is this something that might be able to change with our generation?
Well, I think that's where history comes in handy. If you don't have any history, it's very easy to get depressed by looking around you and seeing, wow, there's no great movement of protest. We don't have a chance. When you know some history, you realize that every social movement has gone through this, has experienced this. Every social movement starts with people thinking they don't have a chance. When I went south in 1956, things were quiet in the South. There was no great movement. And people looking around could say, well, you know, it looks like there's never going to be a movement. What chance do we have? The white power structure is totally in charge. They have everything. They have the courts. They have the governors. They have the legislatures. They have the police. They have the money. But what happened? There were people who didn't get discouraged by that. There were people who understood that you need to build a movement, and it can't be built overnight, and that in these periods, which are quiet periods, you can organize, you can work with other people with the hope, with the faith, that if you don't give up, if you persist, more and more and more people are going to join your ranks. And soon, before you know it, you have a movement. So it requires patience, persistence, not passive patience, not a patience that is accompanied by inaction, but a patience in which you act, and you act even though your actions don't seem to bring any results. But every action, however small, has a result, and that result may be invisible. But everything you say to another person, every act you take that is challenging authority, is something that builds up. And at a certain point in history, all of these little acts build up into great social movements. That's the history of change in this country and in other countries.
Yeah, absolutely. So to sum it up, it's just kind of like you got to keep on trucking.
Yep.
yet another good title, maybe a bumper sticker. I'm having a lot of good ideas tonight, Howard.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. So okay, one more question, Howard. I know that you probably have to get going. Why would somebody like you, who is busy as hell and lives in Boston, Massachusetts, and has never been to Muddy Waters, why would you take the time to talk to these people today? What is it about things like this that drive you?
What encourages me is that people listen. What encourages me is that there are people all over this country, all over the world, really, who are hungry for encouragement and who want to know that there are people who feel the way they do and think the way they do. And I remember Kurt Vonnegut, the great writer, was asked, why do you write? And he said, I write so that you won't feel alone. And really, that's what gives us hope. That's the reason I talk to people. I want them to realize they are not alone. I want to let them know that there are people like them all over the country and all over the world, that you don't hear a lot from these people because the media won't broadcast what these people say. The media will broadcast what the Secretary of State says or what the President says, or what the so-called experts say, but the media will not broadcast what ordinary people are saying and thinking and feeling or what they're doing, you see. But it's up to us to encourage one another, to learn what other people are doing, and to realize that we are not alone.
Well, I know that that being able to ask you and ask Mark and ask Gnome, who is very ill right now, so he had to cancel tonight, but just knowing that we can approach you and Gnome and Mark and all these other people, it speaks volumes for what we have. It shows that we might actually have a community. We might have a network of people that do love each other. So I know that I feel very blessed and loved that you called us tonight. Maybe these guys feel the same?
Yeah. Thank you. Good luck to all of you.
Thank you so much for calling in tonight, Howard, and take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great, Michael. Bye.
All right, everybody. So that was a double whammy there. There's no break in between. What do you guys think? Mark Rudd, XSCS, Weather Underground. Now he's a self-proclaimed liberal Democrat. Boo.
Who thinks Ward Churchill is the cop?
Right. He does. He's actually said that on my show many times, that Ward Churchill is the cop. It's pretty funny. But that shows me we can disagree and still be friends. I love Mark. I think he's a great guy. And he called us. I had fun with him here tonight. And then Howard Zinn. What do you guys think about Howard Zinn? I think that he's always been kind of the
radical Yoda.
Yeah, the grandfather that you're so excited to see at Christmas. You know, like he's one of those guys. Like he's just always so goddamn cheerful that he just can't help but smile when you hear Howard Zinn speak. It's that's great. He woke me up yesterday morning at like 10 in the morning with a phone call, and I answered the phone. I was like, "Hello." He's like, "Yes, Michael, this is Howard Zinn." I was like, "Oh, okay." He's like, "I'm sorry, did I wake you?" And it was 10 in the morning, so I didn't want to be like, you know, this guy who's been working his ass off organizing for the past, oh, I don't know, 60 years. Like, no, man. Like I don't sleep until 10 in the morning. There's too much work to do. But I was totally asleep, like completely out of it. I was so embarrassed. I was like, yeah, no, it's a time change. Whatever, I don't know. What's up?
You woke my ass up this morning, actually.
At 10 in the morning. Yeah. But no, I think it's great that the reason that I asked those people to call in tonight, I want to make this really clear, isn't because they're experts on these ideas. It's not because they have some kind of hidden knowledge that we don't have. The reason that I wanted to get Noam and Howard and Mark to call in is to show you guys that after all these years, they're still down with the cause. And that gives me this idea that we're not going to fade away, and we don't have to fade away. We saw hundreds of thousands of people in the street in 2003 protesting a war that is still going on, and we don't see those people anymore, but there's some of us that are still here. And I think that if we just have an understanding that we don't have to fade away, we don't have to give up on our ideas, and we don't have to give up on our loves and our passions to exist in this world, that is so fucking important. And having a space like Muddy Waters that you know you can rely on to show up to really is fucking crucial. It's really crucial because without a center gathering point, you're going to lose connections. You're going to lose the network. You are. I fucking promise you. I promise you it will be gone. And within 5 years without spaces like this, you'll have a fucking job. You'll have some kids. You'll have a fucking rent. You'll have car payments. And you will stop being able to take part. Places like this force you to get out of your house. They force you to bring your families here. They force you to be a part of a community because you love it and you can't get away from it. So don't let these places slip away. Whether you're, you know, the listeners that are out there listening right now, we've got a lot of people that are listening. A few of them are in the chat room. Wherever you are, find the collectives in your community. If there isn't one, fucking make one, man. It's really a lot of work, but it's really the most rewarding work that I've ever been involved in. It's collectives I've been involved in the past.
Michael, us both being in mid-20s or older, you can vouch for the fact that with each year we see more and more of our own peers drop off the table and back into normal, civilized life.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of people that used to be arm-in-arm with us in the streets 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that aren't around anymore. But there are people like Carl with a K and Alley Cat who all these young people that come together and if we can't provide a space for them to stick around, then they're going to be gone too. They're going to be gone.
Exactly. I understand that's more of the importance of space. People, our own friends of our age, already don't have spaces like this, so they let them slip away and then they slip off with it.
Absolutely, absolutely. But this space is here now. And so, well, fuck it, man. Keep it, right? I mean, why not? I'll have Muddy Waters be around for a few more years. I don't know about you guys. You guys down with that? Down with that? I think it's can we get consensus on that, everybody? So we've got about 40 minutes left on this show, and I'd like to get some callers. I know we've got a few people in the chat room. We also have some listeners that aren't in the chat room. The call-in number is 646-200-3974. I don't necessarily want to talk about the pressing political issues of the day with our callers today. I'm going to ask that if you call in and share with us about either your lack of community or your surplus of community and why it's important to you. What collective actions you have going on in your communities, and this I think will open up a dialogue a little bit. But we're so fucking negative on Burn every week because it's funny. But it's kind of hard. It's challenging to have a positive, uplifting show. It's a challenging thing to do in this world, and let's try to do that today. Let's try to have some positivity on this show. Not that I don't think that all the things that we talk about otherwise are positive, because I do view those things as being positive. I view resistance as a positive thing. But
But let's talk about what we're doing within our community. Let's talk about what anarchists are doing across the country. NWO41, Matt, call in. Talk about what it's like to be organizing the anti-G20 Toronto event. I'm thinking that this is one of the first things that you've been a part of organizing, Matt. So give us a call. Tell us what it's like to be organizing an event such as that. The line's open, 646-200-3974. In the meantime, I'm going to play, let's get a song going. Nothing says positivity like this guy.
Yeah. It's that real this time around. Revolutionary Volume 2. It's on now, motherfucker. Lock and load. This is the point of no return. I can never go back. Life without parole. Upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole. Looking at the world through a crack. But fuck that. I'd rather shoot it out than get clapped. I've gone too far. There ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos. Raping the black and Indian women. Creating Latinos. Motherfuckers made me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus. Stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber. Strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, you not ready. This is the point of...
Alright, so I cut off the technique because we do have a call on the line. 870, you're on one.
Hey, what's up, this is NWO411. What's going on, Rabble?
Hey, what's happening, sir? So tell us a little bit about what's going on with you are organizing with Cindy Sheehan right now against the G20, the Group of 20 summit in Toronto. Tell us what that looks like for you. I know you're just in the startup stages of this organization, this organizing, but what have you come up as a challenge so far? What are some of the things that you've been facing?
Well, it's been a unique experience to organize with such high level people like Cindy Sheehan. Excuse me. We've been attacked on every level in terms of instigators and neo-libs coming in. York University actually came in and gave us a full level bombardment of globalist bullshit. We had to block all that, and then we've had a lot of threats and just a lot of weird stuff going on. So we're already almost 4,000 strong, and it's only been open like 2 weeks. The official quick link to it is stopg20.com, and it's just huge, man. We're gonna tear shit up. If we can get across the border, us Americans are gonna really protest harder than ever before. The Pittsburgh really gave us an idea of what we're up against, and this time we're gonna be more prepared than ever. It's gonna be bigger. It's gonna be better, and everybody needs to come out. Stopg20.com. Just come up there, and you can organize with us.
Now, is this the first taste of organizing resistance that you've had a part of?
Well, I did some Tea Party stuff earlier in the year. I've actually just woken up to the New World Order within the last year. I know it's weird. I actually voted for Obama, but over the last year, I've given up everything else I've done and researched the New World Order, and now I'm ready to face it head on. So, yeah, this is the first thing I've really hosted that's huge. I mean, this is going to be huge, huge. So it's
an
honor.
Yeah, I know Pittsburgh was a blast, man. I don't think I'll be able to make it into Toronto. But, yeah, it was such a blast that I lost hearing in my right ear from their LRADs. But yeah, man, I'm really stoked that you're getting a chance to go this time. I know we had plans to go to Pittsburgh together, and that fell through. But you're going to have a fucking great time up there, I guarantee it. Now, from your perspective, which is not inherently an anarchist perspective at all, why would somebody like you want to protest against the Group of 20? What is it about them that puts a sour taste in your mouth? What's going on?
Well, that's something I've been asked by not only anarchists, but the neo-libs and neocons that just seem to oppose anything that's anti-globalist. It's, I don't know what it is, but The reason I'm protesting this is because I'm against the New World Order, number one. But number two, these heads of finance, ministers, and leaders, quote-unquote, of our world have gotten us into this mess, and now they think they have the solution to get us out. And it's going to be more IMF, it's going to be more globalization, more centralization of power, and indebting nations through corruption. It's just bad. It's bad all around. These guys are the evilest of the evil, the Illuminati. The Bilderbergs make up most of the people that attend it. So, I mean, it's just obvious that if you're against globalization, you're going to be against the G20 and the G8.
Well, you know, from my perspective, while I enjoy a good conspiracy theory documentary, and I think that that's quite entertaining and informational in some ways, I don't put that much credence on a group of fat white men to be able to dominate and control the planet as a lot of the New World Order ideas are. Yes, there are conspiracies. It's not a theory. There are conspiracies of people coming together to create situations in which they'll profit. But I'm not scared of them. They're not a secretive organization. They're very much in your face. They're very much in the public eye. The planet is not dying. It's being killed, as Utah Phillips said. And those who are killing it have names and addresses. So this isn't a secretive organization. These people are open about who they are and what they're doing. What's interesting is how closed off we are to the understanding of that. As a society, we've closed ourselves to the understanding of what Made in China really means.
Exactly.
We don't quite understand that's not an idea of multiculturalism at play, that's outsourced slavery, that's outsourced genocide, and that's outsourced the destruction of this planet for profit. I'm with you as far as the resistance aspect. You know that we've talked about this. I'll always be down with standing arm in arm with you in the streets. But I think that some inspection needs to be made here as to where the important values lie. I see in the chat room there you're talking about saving the planet being a bad thing. And, you know, just because governments are buying into or using these green ideas to coffer the people's will, doesn't mean that they actually give a shit about these things, number one. They don't. They're the ones who are destroying the planet, and they're just putting this face on to make you think that they care about you. But, we know that they're not going to stop killing the planet, no matter how many accords they sign, no matter how many
Well, where do you stand on cap and trade? That's an important issue, because that's something that's right now in our face, and
it's a
quote-unquote solution. Well, how do you feel about cap and trade?
Cap and trade is a way for corporations to buy themselves out of the responsibility of being a human. It's that simple. They buy themselves out of the responsibility.
It's just another form of money. A fiat currency of permission slips to perform the same duties that everybody's always done. It doesn't provide any solutions at all. And this is what the G20 is going to be promoting.
Yeah, and it's not as if any of the taxes levied against these rich corporations are going to go to help feed starving people or help house homeless people or give insurance to those who are not insured in this country. It's going to go to buy another fucking drone bomber so it can kill poor brown people all around the planet. That's what these
that
taxes are.
And it's actually going to kill people. It's not going to feed people. It's going to kill them because this is going to tax everything. This isn't just a tax on industry. It's also a tax on agriculture. I mean, it takes machines to process these food materials. It takes machines and boats to get them to the third world countries. They're going to be poorer than ever. Everybody in the world is going to be poorer than ever, and it is not going to lower the carbon emissions because it's not providing a solution. It's just another tax.
Right, and I think that would beg the inspection of where the real problem lies. Does the problem lie with the with the unfair taxation, or does the problem possibly lie with the fact that these assholes even exist? That civilization exists in the way it does, and it's defended to its death by those that it's killing. We're fighting to keep alive a system that is killing us. It's absolutely strangling us. It's strangling us.
I do agree that this system is killing us, but I think that what we are mistaken on is a blind, like the horse blinders that come on us. What we're not seeing is the alternatives, and the alternatives are the horse blinders. Mainstream media, what we got are alternatives to this crisis of economic sustainability, and I hate the word sustainability because it's normally related to eugenics and global genocide, basically. But sustainability can be a positive thing if we focus on renewable resources. The sun, for example. Why are we not harnessing the sun's energy? If we just did that, we would stop the coal mining in the mountains. We would save our ecosystem.
The planet does harness the sun's energy. Just because humans don't put it through a little system and feed their fucking Priuses with it.
Right, but we all need electricity. And we're burning oil.
That's the sun's energy. All of these things are the sun's energy. We just have been taught to think that we need to use the sun or use anything as a resource to power our expansion. And it's colonialist ideas. It's imperialistic ideas. And these are the
ideas
that
are killing. Corporatist ideas. It's the corporations that have been, since Reagan.
It's non-effect culture, not corporatist ideas. Corporations are just the new form of feudalism. That's all it is. It's a new form of king. It's a new form of ruler. It's evil and it's disgusting and it needs to be fought, but it's no different than the evils of any other colonialist group through history. It's absolutely
Hang on,
no
man.
Different. The only difference That there's no borders and there's no nationalism behind corporatism. There's nothing for the people to rally behind. So they get them to rally behind products and consumption instead of rallying behind that which they need, land, and they need community. But no,
I think the best way to solve all these problems we've got is to start your own community, like Waco, and literally just defy what's around you. Just turn your back to it. Get all your friends together. I know you've already done this. I mean, I've read your Facebook post. You're
a little
community.
Whoa.
Right?
Whoa, be careful what we're talking about here. syndicated internet radio, we do not have a community in the shape of Waco for the feds that listen.
Here's the tanks rolling up now. No, but seriously, though, I mean, that is the best way to do it. I mean, you can't fight the system.
That's what we're talking about now is I want to get off this negativity that we're on right now, because that's what we're talking about is community building and organizing. And this is where arguments like what you and I are having, these debates, can be fresh and can be new and exciting and create discourse. So, Matt, you live in the Midwest, right? Or do you call it the South where you live?
I'm in Arkansas, so I'm in the South, I'd say.
Oh, you're definitely South then. Woo, boy. So in Arkansas, do you have within your communities there communal spaces like what we're talking about with Muddy Waters, spaces for gatherings of dissent, spaces for people to come together to create, not just for political dissent, but to create, to come together and find people to play music with, find people to do art with, find people just to commune with and hang out. Do you are there spaces like that where you're from?
No, but we do play a lot of disc golf, and we have a state park right here in my town, Jonesboro. So we have our community that's just not official, but that sounds awesome. I wish we did have something like that.
Well, I think Matt, it's easier than you think to start, and maybe we can talk about how to start that in your community. Now, Matt, in your area, last year I read a pretty interesting news story that I think maybe people here would get a kick out of. Just outside of West Memphis, Arkansas, there was a small township that the police just gave an exorbitant amount of traffic tickets. Hundreds of traffic tickets a month were given out in a very small town. And it was the chief of the fire department who went to court to battle one of these and got into a screaming match with the police, wherein the local cop pulled his gun in the courtroom and shot the fire chief in the back. The courtroom. And
that was Mark
so Tree. Fire chief was,
and
he was in the hospital, and we got such a kick out of this story at our collective that we actually called the hospital and left him a message to his room of solidarity. Like, we figured that anybody who's become a victim of police violence needs to be supported. And this guy was clearly a victim of vicious pig violence. But what happened after that, Matt? Can you tell us what happened in this town after the cops shot the fire chief?
Well, I can tell you what happened. That was Mark Tree, Arkansas, and it was about 30 minutes away from where I live. And it's been a speed trap there for the last 20 years, literally, at least. And it's required in order to get from Little Rock or Jonesboro to get to Memphis, to go through this town. And it drops from 70 miles an hour down to 45. instantly for about a mile stretch. And they will pull over anybody that crossed that 45-mile-an-hour zone instantly if you're going over the speed limit. And I don't know, thousands of tickets over the last few years, last 10 years, have been accumulated, I'm sure. The town is rich, but they only have one police station. It was closed down. There is no police station there now, right now.
What happened for the, because that you kind of fuzzy for the people here that can't hear that. What happened in the town was after this fire chief was shot, they declared that all police in that town were done, and you had to go, and there were no cops in that town anymore. This is a town whose cops abused their authority to the point where they became non-existent, and now we have a town without police.
You can drive through there any speed you want because there's not going to be a patrol officer there. There will be state cops that periodically drive through, but there's no city police there at all. It's a good 100 square mile town. It's huge.
There has been a real estate rush of anarchist collectives moving into that town.
No police.
If that got on infoshop.org that there was a town without police, I guarantee that the whole town would be squatted tomorrow. You'd see thousands of kids dressed in black brewing their own beer on the streets and dumpstering bagels.
But you'll be rest assured that there is still a strong fire department, so everybody's still safe. The chief is still slightly wounded, but...
Well, Matt, thanks for calling in, and good luck, bud, with the organizing of the anti-G20 stuff. I hope you get across the border safely and soundly, and I hope you get a chance to fuck a little shit up in Toronto.
All right, man. I hope you can make it if you can. Talk to you later, Rabble.
All right, man. Okay, so we are down about 20 minutes, and somebody, Solidarity, is asking about tactics and strategies for forming new collectives. Gosh, you know, this is the interesting thing about collective organization is that it's as unique to the group as the group is unique. There's really no one right way to do any of this stuff, and I'm sure as the collective workers of Muddy Waters will tell you, it's a grand experiment, and it's a struggle sometimes to find the right way to organize collectively. There's no pamphlet you could read that could give you all the ground rules and ideas that'll make you a functioning collective. It just won't work that way. A plus B equals collective. Yeah, there's no singular problem or no singular creative idea that every group shares. It's so diverse. But some basic ideas that you can learn from is by reading. There's a book called Sin Patron, and it's about the Argentinian workers' collective takeover of their factories in 2005. And it's written by the workers of the Zanon Collective, which was one of the first and the largest collective workers' factories in Argentina. This factory was taken over by the workers. It wasn't a consensual decision to start up a factory as a collective. It was a basic capitalist system that the workers just got fed up with taking the shit and getting the shit into the sticks and the bosses. And when they tried to close the factory down and leave these workers high and dry, the workers occupied, took over the factory, fired the bosses, and have since maintained the space as a collective, running things by consensus.
And actually showing that they could continue their industry with profitable products to sustain themselves and their families. And after the fact, the owners took a second look at the properties and infrastructure and realized that it was something that they could make money with and attempted to reobtain it legally. And after a long, long battle, the workers actually did now have legal ownership of it still.
Right, and the reason that happened is because there was a very, very large outpouring of support from the community. Now, what we're seeing here is the same idea, but I'm talking on a level that was unprecedented because these people understood firsthand what economic crisis really was. And it wasn't just about a cut in pay, and it wasn't just about tightening the belt. It was life or death situation, which it is for us, too. We just don't see that yet. But the entire populace of Argentina took over, and they kicked out the politicians, and they fought back in the streets against an economic crisis that was engineered by the banks, much like what's happening here.
Of every single Argentinian.
Right, and these were just hardworking people. They weren't necessarily radically minded as a collective consciousness before this action, but they damn sure are now. And what we see is point A being a center point to gravitate towards,
where people can see a collective shared interest in something. Here, that's Muddy Waters. In your community, it's going to be whatever collective that you're a part of. And then you see a force from outside of that tearing it down in some way, whether it's intentional, whether it's conspiratorial, or whether it's just the daily weight of life and the daily weight of living within a system that tells you you can't do this, and you insisting that you can. pardon me. We see these things working together to form and chisel away at what will either be a strong community or what will be a faltering community. And I'm seeing people come together here this week in a way that I haven't seen in years, and it's beautiful. And I'm really looking forward to seeing a sustainable community come out of this. So
it's going to be collective, right?
So, for any listeners that are listening now, go to muddywatersportland.com. Is that right? Muddywatersportland.com, and donate into PayPal there if you got something. Especially for people out there that are listening that don't have a collective space in their town, this is your chance to be a part of helping to sustain something that you're longing for. And it's just a small step. This is donating a few dollars, whatever you got, will help this place stay alive. But I highly encourage you to start collectivizing in your own communities, building a group of not just like-minded people. I don't like it when people say that we're a like-minded group, because we're such a diverse group of people with diverse ideas. We are not a like-minded group. We just have a goal, and that goal is having a space, having some place that we can be. And that doesn't make us like-minded. It just makes our efforts combine. And I think that's important. So find the people in your community that are interested in having a space for creative ideas and build one. There's a lot of places you can look to get some support. There's collectives that have been around for forever. The Wooden Shoe Collective in is that in Baltimore?
Baltimore,
I think. Red Emma's in Boston. All of these spaces, just look them up online. Look up Anarchist Collective. That's a good space to start, to find these collectives that have been around for years and functioning in a way that challenges the business structure that exists today, that challenges the social structure that tells you that profits are more important than your existence, and that profits are more important than your safety or your comfort or your creativity. So you know what, we have 15 minutes left. I'm going to cut the show off early because I'm hot, I'm tired, and I'm ready to play some music and get some dancing going on. So Muddy Waters, are you ready for that? You guys have a good time tonight with the guests. I want to thank Mark Rudd and Howard Zinn one more time. And Matt and everybody who took part in this show tonight, I'm hoping that we can really raise some awareness and raise some funds. So check out muddywatersportland.com. Check out the stopg20.com to see what's going on in Toronto. Check out no2010.org. Fuck, man, there's just so many spaces to go to. Just get radical, man. Get to the root of it. Everybody, this is Vern reminding you to give a hug, take a punch, and always, always, always stand up.
And tug your beard.